And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, bringing you the news from the community and around the world right here to Hamilton, broadcasting out of McMaster University. And we're very pleased today, very timely interview. We have Margaret Kimberly. Margaret Kimberly writes the Freedom Rider column for Black Agenda Report, where she's also an editor. So, Margaret, thanks very much for being on the program with us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Well, as I was saying just before the interview, I really enjoyed reading Black Agenda Report's coverage of the election and your articles, the latest of which I think is in Counterpunch as well, from about 2 days ago. That one was called Obama's Hollow Legacy, I believe.
Yes.
You know, it's refreshing to hear someone just say it like it is, some real straight talk, because, you know, most people are just running around like chickens with their heads cut off after this election. But not you, not Black Agenda Report. You know, that outlet had been talking about Hillary Clinton as a weak candidate, you know, as a candidate that doesn't generate support for quite some time. And you do things that are perhaps unexpected by the standards of what passes for the American left. I mean, there was a good comment in one of your articles, and that was that Donald Trump had said during the campaign to black voters, he said, "What have you got to lose?" You know, he was criticized for that, but it wasn't quite so outrageous, really. And that's kind of an indication of how bad things are. So I'm just wondering if you could tell us maybe what did Obama do for black Americans, or what's Obama's legacy in terms of black America?
Well, it's, you know, his legacy, it should be one of style and image over substance. The idea of having a black president is something that people debated for decades. Would we ever see it? Could it ever happen? And then when it did, there was this outpouring, actually during the campaign after he won the Iowa caucuses and proved that he could get white people to vote for him and he could raise money. From that point on, January 2008, it was a love fest. And but that's all there was to it. There was great pride in these, this imagery, this very powerful imagery from of the presidency and the first lady, and so he was beloved. I don't think that is an exaggeration to use that word, but Obama, I had argued before he ran that we might have a black president, but we might not be very happy after we got that, because in order to win, black people have to be thrown under the bus. Politicians make points, score points with white people by assuring them they're not going to do anything for black people, and he was no exception. In 2004, he gave a speech at the Democratic Convention where John Kerry was nominated. That's the year he ran for the Senate, and he was allowed to give this speech in prime time, which was big, and he said, "There is no black America. There is no white America." And he was going on to say there is only one America. But that words like that are very telling. He made it clear from the beginning he was not going to do anything to fulfill the special needs and distinct needs that black people have in this country. Whenever he was asked about black unemployment or any issue involving black people, his answer was always the same: the rising tide lifts all boats. I'm the president of the whole country, so if I can help the economy, it helps everybody. But there was never any intention, never any effort to do something that would help us in any particular way. And we do have particular needs. We needed a bigger stimulus program that would produce jobs. There are places like Detroit, Michigan, and New Orleans, Louisiana, which are in great need of government help, where people are desperately poor. Detroit was driven into bankruptcy by the banks, by the way, who ended up getting paid first, but that's another story. The people in Flint, Michigan, whose water was poisoned with lead, he didn't do anything. That was as late as this year. He visited Flint for a photo op. He drank some water. He said, "I feel fine, and maybe I got some lead as a kid, and I turned out okay." He could get away with saying insulting things about black people, which gave white people a message that he would not in any way upset the status quo.
Yes.
As far as what they could always expect should happen, or rather should not happen for black people. So that has been his legacy. But it was all very hollow, the love for him. There were people who came out to vote in 2008 who either had not voted in years or who had never voted at all, just to see him become president. And one of the reasons Donald Trump will be inaugurated instead of Hillary Clinton is that those people who were so disengaged, who didn't vote before 2008, went right back to not voting when they couldn't vote for him again. And there was no plan. And one of the reasons I blame the Democratic Party for this loss, there was never any plan to engage those people. Well, first of all, you engage people by delivering, by doing something for them. No plan to keep some of their votes, nothing. Just Obama giving speeches saying, if you care about my legacy, you'll vote for Hillary, which you can't transfer one person's popularity to another. He told jokes about he made up this character, Cousin Pookie, and he'd always say when he wanted black people to vote, tell Cousin Pookie to get to the polls, which is something a white person couldn't get away with. So the Cousin Pookie jokes and what about my legacy comments, that was what passed for outreach in the Democratic Party. And that's why there were Hillary Clinton received 6 million fewer votes than he did in 2012. That's one of the reasons why, and why Donald Trump is going to be the president and not her. So this his attitude toward black people was very dismissive. There was no desire to engage people, and that led to fewer votes, and it led to this crazy electoral college system whereby someone can get more electoral votes and but lose popular votes and still win. So this is Hillary Clinton's defeat is the result of many things, but in large part because of the hollowness of that relationship.
Exactly. I mean, Clinton ran a lackluster campaign, but her defeat was much much deeper than that. And I think you mentioned in your article that Obama was seen by many black Americans as a sort of symbolic victory in having a black president, and people might enjoy watching him and the first lady get dressed up and go to fancy gala dinners. But, you know, you can't eat symbolism. And
no,
you know, that's the problem. That Obama has the same problem that the other Democrats that went before him and are coming after him have had, which is that they don't deliver for most Americans in economically. And the mobilization is a key problem here, as you point out. As you said, if you deliver to your constituency, if you understand that you have an electoral base and you give them what they want, if you give them the Employee Free Choice Act, if you give them single-payer Medicare, they will become enthusiastic and they'll participate in the next campaign. They'll want to keep these things going. But the Democrats don't do that. They just say words during election season. And then when they get in, they demobilize their base. I'm wondering if you could tell me about this demobilizing process.
Yeah, you know, Americans are only motivated, are only encouraged to participate in politics every 4 years. And there's very little discussion of how to mobilize outside of the electoral arena. So it's restricted to every 4 years, a Democrat and Republican run against one another. And each side pretends to care about their base. So Republicans have depended on mostly white voters. It's, you know, people are keep pointing out that most white people voted for Trump, but that's true every 4 years. The Republican generally gets most white votes, more conservative socially, against abortion, things like that, but conservative politically, not in favor of human rights and civil rights. The Democrats talk a good game, and they'll talk about getting more liberal judges, for example. But aside from that, they did nothing. The Employee Free Choice Act card check, as it was called, which would have made it easier for Americans to unionize. The Democrats did nothing. First 2 years Obama was in office, 2009 and 2010, he had majorities in both houses of Congress, and the Democrats could have done anything they wanted. So they didn't do card check. Obamacare was his signature achievement, but it wasn't Medicare for all. So it's still a mess. We still have a health care system that is run by the private sector, by market forces, and that is the cause of all of our problems with health care. They didn't raise the minimum wage. There's a broad mass movement to make the federal minimum wage $15 an hour. It's almost $9 now. I think it's $8.75 or something like that, to make it $15. Well, the Democrats had a chance to raise the minimum wage those 2 years. They could have made it anything they wanted to, and they only raised it, I believe, 70 cents in 2009. So that's the kind of thing that they do. All this attention being paid finally to police brutality and police murder, and not one prosecution. The federal government has the ability to prosecute. Nothing from the Obama administration. So no help to these Rust Belt, so-called Rust Belt states that were the industrial backbone of the country, states like Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin. Pennsylvania, Democrats could be counted on to win at least three of those four states. But no help for any of the people struggling in these places. So the bubble burst. It was very clear the shallowness of his support just disappeared with him. And the New York Times, who I criticize often, but today they had an article about Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a majority black city, one of those cities that deindustrialized and has been depopulated and is left with this poverty-stricken population. And many people there didn't vote, a huge drop-off from 2012 to 2016. And residents there talked about their frustration with the political system, which doesn't do anything for them. So this is why Donald Trump is president. Hillary Clinton wanted to drive up his negative ratings, and she succeeded. A lot of people didn't want to vote for him either, but she didn't offer a positive vision for herself. She didn't tell people what she was going to do to make their lives better. So there was just this assumption that Trump was such an outrageous figure. He'd made these racist statements, and of course no decent person would vote for him. So we saw a repeat of the Brexit phenomenon, where you tell people that their opinion is the stupid opinion, the racist opinion, and they're not honest about having it. And one of the reasons his, and I will have to admit, I thought she would win. I thought she would eke out a victory. But one of the reasons I think that polls showed her ahead is that people lie to pollsters. If you tell them their opinion is a stupid opinion, they won't even say it to a stranger on the telephone. So are you going to vote for Brexit? No. Are you going to vote for Trump? No. Do you like Hillary? Yes. And in fact, that was not the case. So and it's very difficult now to talk about. I believe this needs to be the last time that anybody's opinion is so marginalized and so demonized that they won't discuss it freely and publicly. That's a bad thing for a lot of reasons. Even if you want the Democrats to win, they certainly needed to know that this that things were trending against them. So this is an earthquake, and it's a very confusing time for most Americans. It's a very difficult time. So it'll be interesting to see what shakes out.
Yes, I can't agree with you more. In your article, you called Obama a hollow president. And I think, you know, that very much style over substance. And this is the problem with the Democratic Party, and it was exemplified in the Clinton campaign, as you point out, because her campaign was, the other guy is really bad, and you don't want him to be president, so you got to vote for me. And it wasn't about here's why I'm so good, or here's why the Democratic Party is so good. And it just occurred to me, or it struck me, that both Hillary and the Democrats have a problem selling themselves, because when you think of their party name or a campaign, you can't think, who are these guys? What do they mean? What's their program? Why give them any long-term support? Is there a few points, major points you can associate with them, like they're going to bring in single payer, you know, they're going to make things easier for unions, they're going to actually do something about the environment or global warming, they're going to repeal a free trade act. none of those things were clearly associated with the campaign, because ultimately, you know, the Democrats are just a sort of veneer on corporate globalization. And so when Rust Belt America, when white, black, red, brown workers are suffering and are worse off after 8 years of Obama, you know, reality catches up, and a smooth talking person like Obama, he can't deliver it to the next campaign. So, I mean, what does the Democratic Party actually offer to workers, or what does it mean to people in the United States?
Well, they have a reputation as being the party of fairness. I would say that's it. The party that, going back to the days of FDR during the Depression, when he created the Social Security Act and the public assistance system, and those are the things, human rights and civil rights. The Democratic Party became the party that supported the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act in the 1960s. And they've been living off of this reputation for years, even though they have nothing to show for it. Even though what they do is more marketing than anything else, and essentially they want to be in the White House so they can cut deals with the Republicans and cut deals with corporations. So the trade agreements, which have been disastrous for American workers, and that's something NAFTA started with Bill Clinton, Obama with the TTP, and all of these deals that essentially make it easy to move money around the world, which is a bad thing for working people. But these are things that Democrats love. The outsider candidate Bernie Sanders raised that issue. Donald Trump raised that issue, and it's one of the reasons that he was not supported by his party's establishment. He said things that were outside of Republican Party orthodoxy, saying that America should reevaluate its role in NATO. Or he's inconsistent. One hand he says, let's take the oil, and the other hand he says, no more regime change, no more. Getting out of Syria. Look at Libya. Look at the mess that was made in Libya. And, you know, and that's another thing. The Democrats had a reputation as being the party of peace, and now they're the party of perpetual war, right along with the Republicans. So most progressive people who support the Democrats, well, they used to say anyway that they were anti-war. And now everything's turned on its head. It was Obama and Clinton who wanted war. She talked about establishing a no-fly zone over Syria, which was a threat of war against Russia. And that's the sort of thing progressives used to be against. And they used this propaganda and claiming that Trump was Putin's puppet and to help turn people against him and drive the narrative against him. But people who are progressive have signed on to so many things out of loyalty to the Democrats, things they don't want, the wars, mass incarceration, the increasing prison system. They talk a good game about climate change, but the last climate agreement allows the world's temperature to rise. So when Trump says he's going to tear that up, I'm not sure how much worse that really would be. So, you know, Democrats need to think about, especially in the wake of this defeat, being told that you just, you know, you have to be quote-unquote realistic, and we have to support the Democrats no matter what, because the Republicans are so awful. And what do we get? We don't get what we want. And this time, we didn't even get people who could win. After being told that Trump was so terrible and his negatives were so high, they couldn't even beat him, because Hillary Clinton's negatives were very high. And rightly so. She's done things that are very dishonest. We now know she was still doing the business of the Clinton Foundation, which is not a foundation in the truest sense. It's just an influence peddling slush fund. And she was trying to hide it, so she set up a separate server. And once that was revealed, it just looked corrupt, because it was.
Yeah.
And she could not overcome it, or overcome it enough to get people to come out and to vote for her.
Yeah, they don't really give you a reason to go out and vote for them. It's always against the awful Republican, and that just brings you worse and worse candidates, unfortunately. And, you know, both parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, are just presenting a sort of veneer on corporate globalization. The Democrats are presenting this slick internationalist cosmopolitan veneer, and the Republicans have all this stuff about conservative social values. But it's the same thing, which is to export jobs, to automate jobs, don't just totally ignore the Rust Belt, ignore Flint, Michigan, and then people leave them to fend them for themselves, at which point they eventually begin reacting against all of this. They don't know what to do exactly. They might go for Trump and his bold comments, but the Democrats haven't really left people with a lot of choice. The Obama burst of energy was a one-time thing, and you know, as you said, the reasons to vote Democrat for progressives and most Americans have totally diminished in the last few decades, because they don't uphold peace, they don't uphold economic intervention or welfare state or great society anymore. So there's hardly any reason to vote for them. So given that, what do we do moving forward? We know in terms of your articles, you've mentioned that black gains in the civil rights movement and other times in American history, those gains did not come from incremental reforms. They were massive breaks with the system, the Civil War, the civil rights movement. What do people do going ahead if they want to actually see candidates that are worth voting for, or some kind of political representation to get all of those things that have been totally off the agenda for the last 8 or more years?
Well, we have to reclaim that legacy. It's that legacy of resistance that has gotten us real progress in the past. It's creating a crisis within the system, not going along with it, that has helped us in the past. And then the politicians will go along after the people lead them. And that's what needs to happen, whether there's a Democrat in the White House or a Republican in the White House. People have turned out in droves, I think mostly spontaneously. The shock of Trump winning. Nobody thought Trump was going to. He didn't think he was going to win. If you saw his body language the night before the election, he certainly didn't think he was going to win, and Hillary thought she was. But so people, especially places here like New York where she did win, there's a lot of anger and confusion that she, in fact, won the popular vote, but is still not going to be president, that this man who they either didn't take seriously or despised is going to be the president. But, most progressive people don't protest anything unless there's a Republican president.
Yes.
There's this, it's like, in the movies with the vampire. If you take the stake out of their heart, they come back to life.
Well, that's exactly. I lived through those years with you, too. I mean, the Bush years, we were all protesting Bush and the war in Iraq and all the other awful things he was doing, an awful guy, like they say about Trump. So we were all ready to protest that. But when the Democrats get in, the moment the Democrats get in, everyone just puts away their signs, puts away, they just totally demobilize. And then when the Democrat's doing it, it's good. So when the Democrat is doing a coup in Honduras, it's good. And when the Democrat is funding an insurgency in Libya, that's good. When the Democrat is doing regime change in Syria, that's good. And a lot of these things, if the Republicans had these email scandals and all these covert ops around the world, people might be complaining and protesting, which we're going to have with Trump now. But I think, as you're saying, maybe the time to protest was also when the Democrats were in power.
Oh, absolutely. But that, unfortunately, doesn't happen because, we're told they're the only game in town. And you have to support them. It's them or the Republicans who are evil. You can't look at another party. And every 4 years, people will say, we need another party. It would be good if we had another party to vote for. Well, there are other parties. I voted Green. I finally, inertia, shook off the inertia and changed my registration to the Green Party. But they're relegated to spoiler status. And so for the last 2 weeks, all we've heard is that, Jill Stein, the Green Party presidential candidate, siphoned votes from Hillary Clinton, although the votes show that she still would have lost, even if every Jill Stein voter had voted for Hillary Clinton. So anything looking outside of that box relegates you to spoiler status, and it terrifies people, so we continue doing the same thing but expecting a different result. And I just say to people, suppose you stopped voting for the Democrats. Suppose you just stopped. And it wouldn't be this week. Maybe 4 years from now, we could have a real progressive party. But the Democrats want to make deals as much as the Republicans do. Obama certainly did. He was willing to cut. The only thing that kept him from cutting Social Security and entitlement programs was the fact that Republicans were obstructing him. If they'd gone along with him, those things would have happened. Bill Clinton is the one who got rid of welfare as a right. He's the one who increased the federal role in putting people in prison. So at the end of the day, it's usually a Democrat who makes the Republicans' dream come true.
Yes.
And so that's where we are now. But I've been, frankly, disappointed, dismayed at there's so little anger directed at the Democrats. That was my first reaction. I wrote in the middle of the night on election night, dump the Democrats for good. And they can't even win. So
well, that was all they had left, right? All they had left was, you got to vote for us or the bad Republicans will get in. Well, now the
exactly.
bad Republicans...
All they have is the presidency. They have let state legislatures go Republican. All they want is the presidency so they can cut deals. And these issues they claim to care about, like abortion rights, well, having a president who's pro-choice doesn't help any. These anti-abortion laws are taking place in the states, and the Democrats ceded that to the Republicans. So between their grotesque incompetence, the fact that they don't do what we want them to do, the fact that we always end up signing on to things that we used to say we didn't like means that we must look towards a new party, and we must protest them as much as we are protesting Trump.
Yeah, the Democrats have been really good at giving ground to their supposed enemies in the Republican mm-hmm. Party, even when they're coming from a position of strength. They don't fight for anything, not in terms of their own base. So as you point out, I think, you know, looking at third party and building up those third party options is important if you want to have a real choice instead of between the right and the other right wing, you know, party.
Yes, we have a far right party and a center right party. That's the way we describe it at Black Agenda Report.
And, you know, I think it'll take, you know, years to build up those alternatives like the Green Party. I think, but people have to start now because otherwise they're just going to have this choice again where the Republicans are going to run some nutcase and then the Democrats say, well, you got to vote for us or that nutcase will get in. And when we get in as the Democrats, we're not going to do anything for you, but too bad because those are your two choices, right? I mean, people...
Essentially, that's what we get. It's style over substance, I think, with all Democratic voters. The only thing we have are judicial federal judges who have a lifetime appointment. You could argue that that's a reason to vote for the Democrats, but if that's all there is, that's no reason for me not to look elsewhere.
It's not very inspiring. And anyone
no,
that,
it isn't.
anyone inspiring that comes along in the Democrats, they get rid of them so that they can't run for president. You know, they make sure of it.
That's true.
Anyway, it seems depressing, but Americans are already rejecting this. You know, with the Trump thing was a protest against all of these unpleasant candidates. You know, even though Trump himself is unpleasant, people are getting fed up, and I think they might be more ripe for alternatives in the future. So we'll look forward to reading more from Black Agenda Report and your columns in Freedom Rider as people try to build alternatives to this corporate monopoly duopoly system that you have in the United States. So I appreciate the work you've done, and I know it's hard being outside of that Democrat Party bubble where everything is so good and happy and you know, until now, of course. so it's, you know, you're not getting a whole lot of support and boosting, and you got to work harder on your own to get this out there. So we appreciate that. We know it's hard work, and you're still getting it all out there. So thanks very much for being on the program with us today, Margaret.
Thank you so much for having me.